I'm Mark Weisbrot from the Center for Economic and Policy Research, and we're sponsoring this event. And I'm going to introduce Pablo Solon, who is the Special Ambassador for Trade and Integration from Bolivia. I'll say just a few remarks for background on these issues. The rules of the game and the relationships between governments and corporations, international corporations, have been changing a lot in the last few years. But it's a broader change that has taken place.
Hello, this is Dan Sheen with the Associated Press.
Decade or so.
Sorry to be late.
And it's really very recent, actually, that investors acquire the right to directly sue governments. The bilateral investment treaty. NAFTA. And it's part of an attempt that in the 90s and then really accelerated rapidly in about the last 5 years is when most of these cases have been filed. That is, investors government and being able to submit their claim to an international arbitration panel. And so that's one thing. So that's the background. In other words, there was an attempt. There was an attempt in the late 90s, for example, to establish in the OECD. That failed, and so the high-income countries came back and got these things in other venues. Now, the thing that's one trend. The other trend is that in just the last few years, you've had a change in the other direction. And the big change in the other direction has been that governments have declared more autonomy and shifted the relationship in the other direction. Now, I remember, I'm just trying to explain, you know, as background to this event, why this is important, because I remember in 2002 when Lula da Silva was running for office in Brazil in May, when he first pulled ahead in the polls, there was a major financial crisis in Brazil, and everyone thought that if he were to win, some kind of disaster would happen in the financial markets and to foreign investors in general. And, of course, he did win, and no such disaster happened. And, in fact, it's almost in the other direction. The Brazilian currency continues to appreciate to the point where it's actually hurting their economy, such an inflow of capital. And, you know, you can go through the whole region. When Argentina defaulted on its debt at the end of 2001, it was widely believed that they would face an international disapproval that would really ruin their economy for years. And instead, they became the fastest-growing economy in the Western Hemisphere, averaging over 8.6% annually for the last 5 years. And you can go through the left governments, and Bolivia, of course, is an example. Last year, they ran a record budget, federal government budget surplus of 5.9% of GDP. Even in Venezuela, where the royalties were increased in the Orinoco Basin from 1% to 30% in just the last couple of years, you see all the major oil companies are still there, and all the investors who stayed in these countries, in Brazil, in Argentina, in Venezuela, have actually been doing quite well. So you had, again, a shift in the relationship between governments and corporations, but it did not lead to the simple story that was really emphasized here in Washington, that it would all be bad for foreign investors and for foreign investment and for the host countries. And this should not be surprising. After all, the largest recipient of foreign direct investment of all developing countries for over a decade now has been China, in many years receiving more foreign direct investment than all other developing countries combined. And they have never accepted until the last couple of years, they're beginning to accept, but still the majority of their arbitration that takes place in a panel that is local and not the ICSID. Now, I say this with by way of background because the Bolivian government recently decided to withdraw from the investor dispute arm of the World Bank, which is the ICSID, and that's why that's one of the things that Pablo is here to talk about. And I just wanted to emphasize, you know, before he starts and gives some details, that this is, as an arm of the World Bank, it's not an arbitration panel that one would expect to be neutral, simply because of its being part of the World Bank group. That is, the World Bank group has vigorously promoted privatizations in Latin America and Eastern and Central Europe, Social Security, for example, in many parts of the world, utilities, including water. And obviously, Bolivia had a lot of problems with those privatizations. And so they have taken a strong stance in favor of the corporations in a whole variety of policy changes that have taken place. And they have two avenues of power. One is their own lending, and the other is that they have what is called cross-conditionality, where their lending is made contingent on fulfilling IMF conditions. So as a result of this power, they've had enormous influence, and they have used it on behalf of corporations for quite a while. Now, again, they would argue that this is all best for the governments, and that it's best for the government to cede as much power as possible to the foreign corporations as a means of attracting a foreign investment. And that is, of course, the other side of the story that we hear quite often. But I think it's also been true empirically in the last several years that as these changes have taken place, where governments have taken control more of their own resources, something that was inevitable as the price of oil and other minerals have risen, and these renegotiations, I mean, after all, our government's going to stick to the same contracts that they had, you know, when oil was $15 a barrel. That's not going to happen. So the fact that they were able to renegotiate and claim a greater share, combined with other major changes that have taken place in the world economy, most importantly, the collapse of the IMF's power in middle-income countries, and the availability of other sources of financing in Latin America. Much of that has come from the Venezuelan government. In Africa, it's come mainly from China. But the world has changed, and you would expect the rules of the game to change in a more competitive international environment where states are increasingly asserting their authority. So it's with that background, I think it's important to look at the details, because if we had looked only at the kind of overview that we most see in Washington, we would think that all of these changes would be basically bad for the host countries and bad for the international economy overall. And I think that is not certainly not turning out to be the case. So I'm going to turn it over to Pablo now and give you some of the details of what these changes have meant for Bolivia.
Can I just interrupt real quickly just to confirm that Ambassador Solon is there in Washington, or are we talking with him from Bolivia?
No, I'm here in Washington.
Okay, great.
To everybody, the reason why I have come here is because the Bolivian government has withdrawn from ICSID, and we have come to Washington to begin a very strong dialogue inside the World Bank. To first explain why we have taken this decision, why we want to have to give security to investors, but under rules that are more even between investors and states. And second, to begin a discussion about the reform of the World Bank that we think must have one point, and that point is to really make a turn in relation to the to the exit inside the World Bank. We have had a meeting with the General Secretary of the ICSID, and we told her, Ana Palacios, that we as a country want to have foreign investors in Bolivia, that we as a government that has arrived for the first time in the last 50 years with more than 54% of the votes of the population, wants to have a very important change. We want to have rules that, of course, guarantees investment and profits for foreign investors, but also guarantees profits and benefits for the Bolivian state and for our population. We don't want to take nothing out of an investor. If he really invests, he has the right to recover his investment, and he has the right to have a profit. But it's not acceptable that only he, as an investor, has this profit, and not the Bolivian state, and not the people of Bolivia that are giving up their natural resources. So what we have done in relation to the gas is we have renegotiated 44 contracts. In these 44 contracts, before what we call the nationalization, the state only received 18% of the royalties. And now if you summarize royalties and taxes, the state has 82% of the incomes of this business. And even though this the companies have stayed in Bolivia, because even with their now 18%, they win and they can recover their investment. But the situation of Bolivia is much, much better. For the first time in the last 15 years, we have had a surplus in our budget. We have had also a surplus in our trade balance, and if you see the numbers in Bolivia, we are in a situation that the World Bank, the IMF says it's a very good situation. And why is that? Because we have recovered our right to rule in relation to how much from our natural resources should stay in the benefit of the state and the people. So we want to have very good relations with foreign investors, but in a more even way. And what is happening in relation to ICSID? In our experience, it's not an even platform to solve conflicts between an investor and a state. If you look out in ICSID, you have had about 232 cases during their whole life in ICSID. And only two of these cases were cases that were begun by states against transnational companies. The other 230 were cases that were demands from the transnational companies against states. So what kind of arbitrary panel is this where you see that more than 98% of the cases begin only from one side against the other side? We want to have, of course, a mechanism, but it's not more even that you can see states and investors in a more even way of saying there are problems from this side and problems from this other side. Second, we see that the ICSID is the arbitration, it's a process that usually when it began was a process between privates. A private person or a private company against another private person or a private company. But what has happened, and we have told this to the General Secretary of ICSID yesterday, was that this process that usually was a process between private sectors, now it's a process that is being used between a private and a public sector, that is a state. But the rules haven't changed because you don't have transparency. We only get to know what are the conclusions of this arbitrary panel. At the end, the people, the society cannot be part. It's not public. The press cannot go to see what are they saying. We have seen it in the case of Aguas del Tunari Bechtel against Bolivia. The Bolivian society asked it to be part and to see what was happening in the arbitrary panel. And we were not allowed. And when we have seen that in the 110 cases that have concluded, only in 4 occasions there was admitted an amicus curiae, so the possibility that somebody outside one of the parts, the state and the transnational company, can come to see really what is happening. So we think that if you're going to put into trial a state, it must be something very open, public, and this doesn't happen in the ICSID. We have had a very good discussion to show that there is no code of ethics in the arbitration process. Why? Because you see that in some cases, the same person is some kind of a judge in the arbitration panel, and in another case, he is a lawyer from one of the sides. So usually, if you go and see how it works, the judicial process in all our countries, when you're a judge, you're a judge. You cannot be at the same time a lawyer that is in favor of any other side. But in this process, you see that. And this is really something very, very bad because it doesn't give you security, especially when you're judging a state. And there are so many problems in the process. For example, we have had a discussion. Why have you accepted some cases that really don't belong to the ICSID? And the explanation of the General Secretary is, we don't have the possibility to say which one can't or which one can. We just say, if there is any doubt, let's begin the process and let's have an arbitrary panel to decide this. And our point of view is, you know how expensive can it be for a country like Bolivia to come to an ICSID panel only to explain that we have this case doesn't belong to the ICSID? At least in the case of Aguas del Tunari against Bolivia, at the end, we didn't have to pay because we bought the stocks from Aguas del Tunari. But in lawyers and in the judges of the arbitration panel, we have spent $1,600,000. Mm-hmm. How much did Aguas del Tunari spend during their 6 or 7 months that they were in Bolivia? Let's say about $500,000. So you can say Bolivia won in the exit. Yeah, in a way, at the end, we didn't have to pay. But only in lawyers, more than 3 times what the really investment of Aguas del Tunari Bechtel was in Bolivia. So for our countries, that's unacceptable. We heard yesterday the explanation of the General Secretary saying exit is much more cheaper than other panels. Only $3,000 per day for an arbitrator. Well, that can be cheap for some societies, and of course for some very big transnational companies that have 50 more times of GDP than Bolivia, but for us, that is very expensive. So we need to have a panel, a mechanism that is not so costly, so expensive for countries, for developing countries. And you will say, what did the General Secretary said about all this, our argument? We were very delightful, surprised that they agree that we have the reason in almost all of what I have pointed out. That's really true, that things must be more even, that it's true that countries usually are the ones that are being sued, that it's true that it's very expensive, that it's true that there is the need of a code of ethics in this kind of process, that it's true that there isn't transparency, that it's true that it's a process that began under the private sector, and now there is a problem to just copy it to a solution of conflicts between a private and a public, like the state. But we had one disagreement, a very good disagreement, because we came here to have a very transparent dialogue. What was the disagreement? We think that if there is going to be any kind of mechanism to solve conflicts between a transnational company and a state, it must be outside the World Bank and not inside the World Bank. Why do we think this? Because the World Bank cannot be judge and part. And we say this because, you know, when you have to build an arbitrary panel, one of the arbitrators is designed by the state, the other one by the transnational company, and the third one, if both parts don't agree, is designed by the president of the World Bank. So who elects the most important arbitrator that is really going to decide is elected, if both parts don't agree, by the World Bank. And there you have a conflict. And we said, hey, look what could have happened in the case of Bolivia because we had a problem with Aguas de Limani against Bolivia. Hopefully, this didn't go further on in the exit. But Aguas de Limani in Bolivia had shares, Suez from France, Inversora de Servicios from Argentina, and the IFC from the World Bank. So the World Bank had 8% of the stocks in Aguas de Limani. When we were discussing to get back this company, we had a request from Suez and from Inversora de Servicios, each one saying we want to have this process solved under ICSID. So we said, can you imagine what would have happened? We would have come here to the World Bank, to a panel of the World Bank, where the third arbitrator is elected by the president of the World Bank, to solve a case with a company, with a stockholder, the IFC, that is also part of the World Bank. So in our position, this must be out of the World Bank. We think that there is a lot of discussion now these days about the election of Selic as the new president of the World Bank. But we think the main discussions are not about persons, but are around policies. And the main thing that the World Bank should change is it should focus more on giving finance and credits without conditions to developing countries, and to leave that policy that was promoted during the decades of the 90s of privatization and of having a more focused orientation on what was the consensus of Washington. We think that the most important discussions, and we want to have a discussion inside the World Bank in relation to should the exit be part of the World Bank? How should the exit change? What kind of institutions should we need in order to solve conflicts between transnational companies and states? It can be part of another kind of institutions. We should discuss how this should be a more even process. So this is our main discussion. And just to finish this, there was one surprise for us too, in relation to, well, where can we make this discussion? Well, you can make it in the Council of Administration of the ICSID that has a meeting, an annual meeting. Who comes to this Council of Administration of the ICSID? The representatives of each state that are the governors of the states under the for the World Bank. But, and this was said by a director, a member of the board of the World Bank, you must be in time because this council has a meeting that lasts 5 to 10 minutes every year. Yes, it is so fast that if you don't arrive in time, they say, "Is everything approved?" "Yes, okay, see you." So you better not go, and that's what they told us. You better not go to the bathroom because you can lose that meeting. So this is a problem too, because if you are speaking about democracy and a so important institution, you know, there must be a more control from the countries in relation to how is the process, how is that institution, who's really ruling, who's really deciding what is happening. And so we arrived to the conclusion that, of course, we must make the discussion inside the board of the World Bank, because these 5 minutes are not going to be enough if we just stuck up to that time. So this is our main of point of view. I want to point out that we are not going to withdraw from the World Bank. We have appreciated the debt relief of the World Bank. We have appreciated that the World Bank is beginning a slow change in relation to giving support without conditionalities. We think that this must go on. We hope that there isn't going to be a change with the designation of SELIC and the temptation to make a trade-off between aid and free trade policies. That, as you know, many countries in Latin America don't agree with that. We think that an institution like the World Bank must be a multilateral institution that has to take into account that all countries have the right to decide their own policies. We have respect for the countries that think this is the way, but we also expect that they respect our point of view. And for us, this is very important. And we hope to help to have a more transparency and developing institutions in a more democratic way. So that is the main reason for our visit here in Washington.
Thanks. So we can open it up now for questions. And if you have questions on the phone conference, go ahead and say something. Bob, you were going to ask something first?
Yeah, is there a model you have in your head? If you think ICSID is broken is basically a closed arbitration panel, which is presumably the way it was set up and the way corporate arbitration panels tend to work. I mean, is there a model in your head that you say, you know, this one works pretty well, we should do something like that? Is the WTO, for instance, is that something you think works well?
Well, first, what we think is that this conflict should be solved under the judicial power of each country. You know, yesterday we discussed about this. Problems between transnational companies of Europe and the United States are not solved in the majority of cases under this arbitration panel. They are solved under the judicial process inside the United States or inside Europe. So this should be an emergency process in case, but the main thing should be let's develop and have a more strong judicial system in our countries, in developing countries, and that's the main thing. Second, if something has to come to one kind of this mechanism should be part of a more neutral organization, like, for example, the United Nations. Second, it must be public. We don't think that, you know, you put a country and a transnational company as if they were something even, and there is a difference. You're speaking about 100 million people here, and another you're speaking about $100 billion that this company can have. There should be a tribunal that is not elected by each part, and where the transnational company begins to see to be at the same level of a state. The persons that are part of that arbitrary or that tribunal should be independent, of course. The process should be public, transparent, and it should be something that is not so costly, so expensive for our country. Now, we think that it's necessary a very strong change in this system in the world, because a foreign investor is growing, and if you see cases between transnational companies and states have grown during the last years, and this can even go further. So we need really to begin to think how this process is not going to be used by transnational companies only to get very big compensations. You know, we have had cases here, and I have here a report from the UNCTAD, where you have cases that a country was sued three times by three different companies for the same case. This is under something unacceptable. Nobody can be judged three times for the same reason, but this is possible under ICSID and under this process of arbitration panel.
Just to follow up on that, I mean, aren't you concerned, it's an unusual time in the world, as you said. I mean, commodity prices are very high, money's very easy and cheap. That can change. Commodity prices can drop and money can evaporate. I mean, I'm assuming here, I don't really know much about the background of ICSID, but I'm assuming here that these sort of panels were set up in a way to encourage investment by private companies in developing countries, because frankly they don't trust the judicial system and they think it's rigged. And so they want some sort of panel that they consider to be independent of the country. Are you concerned that if situations change, if gas prices drop, that you're going to put your country in a position where you'll just have inadequate foreign investment, where people will be afraid to come in?
Well, the first thing is we don't agree, and there are reports also from the UNCTAD that says that there is no relation between how many bilateral investment agreements you have if you are part of ICSID and how much foreign investment you receive. There are countries like Brazil, the most important country that receives foreign investment inside South America, and he's not part of ICSID. He doesn't have also bilateral investment agreements because their constitution doesn't allow them. So there isn't really a relation that if you are part of the ICSID, you're going to get foreign investor. That's a very good speech, but that's not reality. For example, have renegotiated these 44 contracts with these transnational oil companies. And they have a clause that says that if there is a conflict, we're not going to go to the exit. We're going to have an arbitrary panel under our rules, national rules, and they agree with that. We think that investors come if they know they are going to win, if they're going to have profits and they are going to recover their investment. That is what we think is what they want. We want to guarantee that them, but we also want to guarantee, because we are the state, that the state and the people are going to have a benefit. This is our main reason, our main concern. I forgot to explain something. We want to give a how do you say in English?
Juridical security. Judicial security.
Yeah, this is something that they always ask for our countries. And we say, yes, but look, in Bolivia, we are a country that our constitution is like the Brazilian constitution. Why is not Brazil part of the ICSID? Because they have a constitution that says that when there is any conflict with a foreign company, it must be solved under their national tribunal. Our constitution says almost the same. But the past neoliberal governments in Bolivia have thrown out our constitution and said, okay, doesn't matter, we approve to be part of the exit, we approve 22 bilateral investment agreements. And we say, are you giving really juridical security to the investors doing that? No, because you are violating your constitution. The 42 contracts that we have renegotiated in Bolivia with the oil companies have went to our Congress and have been approved by our parliament. This did happen with the other government? No. They violated our constitution. They approved contracts without sending them to the Congress. And that was against our constitution. So we as a government want to be very responsible in relation to what our laws and what our constitution says. We think that the best way to give security is to be very loyal to what your laws and your constitution say.
Ambassador,
I was just going to say if people can introduce themselves, just their name and organization. That was Bob Davis from the Wall Street Journal had the first question. Go ahead.
This is Phil Ferries with Bloomberg News in Buenos Aires. Ambassador Solano, I just want to ask you, in the last few weeks and months, Shell Oil has announced that it's going to sell its stakes in power plants and pipelines in Bolivia. Petrobras has sold its refineries. There have been disputes with Brazilian iron miner EBX and with Telecom Italia. I wonder if, I mean, don't you think that the message seems to be that investors are looking to get out of Bolivia at this point because of some of these policies that you've been discussing? And I was also hoping you could give an update on the status of the negotiations with Intel.
Well, we think exactly the opposite. The proof that they want to stay is that we have renegotiated 44 contracts for the gas and oil sector in 6 months.
Petrobras is not investing more. They're just keeping what is already there, right?
I have been in Brasilia with President Evo Morales. I have had the meetings with Petrobras, and the agreement was have the contract, how do you say in English, protocolized?
Legalized,
because, you know, one thing is to sign the contract, then it has to go to the Congress, and after it goes to the Congress, and when this process is finalized, and it has been finalized, they are going to present, as the other companies, their plans of investment in Bolivia, because they are not staying just to stay. They are going to stay because they are also going to win. To explode gas in Bolivia is a very good business, because you have markets already to sell it. markets in Argentina. We have a new contract with Cuiabá. The price has risen. The companies that are going to sell there are going to win more because the prices are better. Even though their shares are smaller, the prices are better. So we are not only expecting, we think that you're going to begin to see a new process of investment inside Bolivia in this sector. Of course, we have bought the refinery that was privatized, Petrobras. We have bought it in an agreement with Petrobras of a price that is around $100 million. And we think it's a very good business for our state. We think that Petrobras has recovered all their investments and have had a very good profit during the last years, very good profit. But now is the time for the state also to have profits. And so we are having this renegotiation with all this company. We are trying to finish all the negotiation for the contract with Jindal, who is going to invest in the mining sector about $2 billion. And we think that there is a publicity saying that they are not going to invest anymore, but, you know, companies really go where they can have profit. And under Bolivian rules, of course, they can have profit. But they have to leave a very good share also for the state and the people.
Could you comment on the negotiations with EBX, Brazil's EBX iron miner, and also with Italian-owned Intel, and what's the situation with those companies, and do you think they will operate or will continue to operate in the country?
Well, EBX is for us is a case closed in April of last year, because EBX was operating without having a license inside Bolivia. So if you want to go to a country and to have a business without getting that license, that wasn't possible. So that's all. The Brazilian government has accepted that what we were doing was only to make respect our own laws and our constitution. In relation to telecom and the negotiations are going on. We hope to arrive to a good price to buy this company back for the Bolivian state. We think, and we say it openly, that we think that it was a very bad business to sell it, to privatize it almost 10 years ago, because, you know, it was always a company that made a lot of profit. And most of the investments have come from the profit that the self company made. But okay, we want to check out really what were their investments, if they accomplished what they said they were going to do in the contract, and to have a very good negotiation with them. We have the right to do that. In this case, there has been unusual, surprising thing that only to say we want to negotiate with the company to buy it has meant that the telecom has announced that they could come to exit. We think that's not really fair, because if you want to say, hey, I want to renegotiate, you cannot be sued for that. I mean, you're just saying you want to renegotiate. So that's one more thing why we are not very happy with this kind of system that doesn't allow you to have very clean and clear dialogues with companies without the threat of being sued under an arbitration panel.
Could you also comment on any plans to renegotiate bilateral investment treaties with the United States or any other countries? And I'm going back real quickly to Intel. Is the government's position that Intel possibly owes back taxes that haven't been paid, and that might factor into the negotiations?
In relation to the first question, we have announced that we are starting the process of renegotiation of bilateral investment agreements. This is not something that is going to happen in 24 hours, even not in a year, because, you know, bilateral investment agreements have, in some cases, 10 years or even 15 years of life, and there are clauses that say when you can renegotiate them, and we are going to respect that. We're going to try to find as quick as possible, but that will take, several months. In some cases, where ICSID was the only kind of arbitrary panel that was contemplated in the bilateral investment agreement. With the United States, it's not only open to ICSID, it has other possibilities of arbitration panel. So we think there is no problem if there would be a case, because the mechanism exists. But we are going to have meetings with all the countries to discuss all the situations of every bilateral investment agreement. You know, we had yesterday, when we discussed with the General Secretary of ICSID, she said, the most biggest problem is not the ICSID Convention, even though you have right in the things that you pointed out at Bolivia. The most biggest problem is the bilateral investment agreements, because most of the bilateral investment agreements that are signed by the countries really don't take into account several things that, when it comes to a case under ICSID, are used in many cases against the country. So it's necessary, we think this, to have a very clear definition of investment, to have a very clear definition when really you can present a case, which is going to be the process to be followed up before you go to an international process of solution of conflict, and things like that. And we think this is necessary to discuss. We as a country are going to begin it. It's going to take many years, but of course we want to, clean up our house that has been very, very messed up during the last 15 years of neoliberalist policy. Excuse me, your other question was in relation of...
back tax. Does Intel owe back taxes, does Telecom Italia own back taxes related to Intel?
This is something that is being, defined.
Investigated, or?
Yeah, not only investigated, the real process is a report of an audit that says exactly how much, when, and so on. I mean, if a state says, hey, you own taxes, legally here in the United States, nobody would say, hey, I'm going to sue the United States because of this. It's our right to see if this has happened or not. If it doesn't happen, okay, but if it happened, then we have the right to ask them to pay this.
Can I just make one brief comment to emphasize something that Pablo said and was brought up also by Bob Davis? What the General Secretary of ICSID said, that one of the bigger problems is the bits themselves, and that's what I wanted to emphasize, is that this arrangement of investor-to-state dispute resolution mechanisms that are written into these treaties was a major, huge shift in the relationship between states and international corporations, that is, giving corporations the right to sue a state directly, which they do not have in the WTO, and which could never have been passed in the WTO, because WTO has a consensus process, unlike the World Bank which is dominated by the United States, and you know, with the Europeans and Japanese having a little bit of input. The WTO would never have accepted such a drastic change. So in the WTO, you a complaint is brought by a government to another government, not by a corporation. And the other part of that change, of course, is the one that the General Secretary of ICSID mentioned, that within these agreements, the terms have been redefined in a very often in a very vague manner. For example, what constitutes expropriation? You know, investors can now sue under a lot of these agreements, including NAFTA, and have done so, for things that affect, for regulations, environmental regulations, that affect the profits of the investor. This is something that was never possible before. So this is what I think Pablo is talking about in terms of cleaning up these agreements. These are some of the things that went way too far in the views of most governments in the world and have to be renegotiated.
Thank you very much.
Mary Berger with Washington Trade Daily. Just to follow up on the idea of BITS renegotiation, were you saying that you're going to wait until, you know, agreement by agreement, until you're at the point where that agreement's ready to expire to talk about renegotiation, or are there some things that you feel you should try to renegotiate now?
Of course, if both parts in both countries agree, it is possible to renegotiate a bilateral investment agreement whenever you want. If both parts don't agree, then you have to respect the agreement that says you can renegotiate that. And it's usually at the end of the first period, that's at the end of the 10th year or the 15th year. So we are going to respect all our treaty, but of course we are going to ask the countries where we have, which whom we have bilateral investment agreement, if they would agree, if that would be the case, to have a renegotiation before that the time.
Have you asked the United States yet?
No. Not yet the United States. We are, as I said, in the case of the bilateral investment agreement of the United States has another platform to solve conflict, not only related to ICSID. We must solve others that, for example, have only an exit clause. We must solve that. We also want to be very clear. If we have, actually, in the exit, we only have one case. And we are going to go, and we are going to be, how do you say, cumplir con nuestras obligaciones, to fulfill our obligations. Of course, we're going to follow up all the rules. Even though we think this is a very unfair case, we're going to follow up, and we are going to respect all the treaties, but we announce in a very open, frankly way that we want to have a change in the rules, because we want even more balanced rules between countries and between countries and transnational companies. And we think this is something good for Bolivia and also something good for the world and institutions like the World Bank.
Isabel Conde from La Agencia EFE. I would like to ask you, how do you think it will affect in your relations to the companies which are now, the foreign companies which are now investing in Bolivia, and if there has been any of them who has pronounced, like, yes, said something about that you're not going to be anymore part of the ICSID?
Yeah, just 2 days after we went out of the ICSID, there was a press conference of the oil companies that have renegotiated the contract in Bolivia, and they say that they didn't care at all because their new contracts don't have this ICSID clause. So the most important investors that we have in Bolivia have said, no problem, we don't care, and what I said, we only have one case, and I want to assure, because, you know, there is always this speculation, you went out of the exit because you're going to have a case from, I don't know, transnational company that's going to sue Bolivia, and this is why you went out. No, we went out because really we want to change the rules. We are looking for more balanced and transparent rules with investors inside Bolivia.
Could you talk a little bit about plans for the mining industry and whether taxes on some of the companies like Apex Silver or Coeur d'Alene are going to be going up this year?
Our government has said, of course, we want to renegotiate with the companies in relation to taxes inside the mining sector. You have, you know, in the oil sector, we have now between 50 to 80% of taxes and royalties for the state. In the mining sector, you have between 1 and 4%, even though the prices have doubled in a lot of cases. And, you know, we must discuss this too. But we want to do it in a very, very reasonable way, because if prices go so much up, we must look that also the incomes for the state and the people are better. We are going to do it in a more in a dialogue, looking for a more balanced way to share the benefits of a business that is going up like the mining sector.
No. I'm not in charge of the details of the negotiation of this, so I cannot say that we have a goal of X percent of taxes or something like that.
Can I ask a question to Mark?
Sure.
Well, Pablo said that it is important in the World Bank to have not a person but better policies. And perhaps, and he said that Robert Salik is going to promote some kind of free trade agreements for loans. Do you agree with that?
I want to say I don't want to prejudge what Salik is going to do, but we want to say that we are very concerned. We want to warn about the possibility that this temptation can take place, because we hope that this is not going to happen.
Well, since I'm not an ambassador, I can prejudge.
That's the difference.
And, you know, our prejudgments have turned out to be deadly accurate over the last 7 years. And so I just want to say that in advance. So, yeah, I think he is, you know. Yeah, look, this is, you know, trade reps tend to be pretty pragmatic compared to a lot of other officials. And one of the distinguishing features of Zoellick is he was not very pragmatic. That's why he didn't get very far in the WTO, in any of the bilaterals, major bilaterals, multilaterals in Latin America. And I think, I mean, if you look at the Bush administration and their record, the bank's record, there's been no reform. There's been no changes. It's still run primarily by the U.S. Treasury Department. You had 500 experts and organizations signed a letter asking to open up the process so that it wasn't simply the U.S. government choosing the head of the World Bank, and it was ignored about as much as you could ignore anything. So I would expect more of the same. There's just no indication and more of the same, of course, that this has been the track record of the World Bank for many years. We at CBER don't use the word free trade to describe these policies because in many cases they're actually quite protectionist, as in the cases of pharmaceutical companies, for example. Whatever you want to call these policies, neoliberal policies, I think the policy is the word most used in Latin America, you have to expect that Zoellick will be a staunch advocate for using the bank to implement the same policy reforms, regardless of their impact or their results.
This is Bill again with Bloomberg. I just had one last question, Ambassador Salone. I wondered, do you have any kind of a target figure for what you expect or what the government hopes to have foreign direct investment at this year and next year as well?
I cannot give you exactly the goal in figures and numbers, but we expect to have concluded a clear plan in relation to investment in the oil sector and the gas sector this year, and we hope this is going to be finished at the end of the year, and we hope that it will be also concluded in the mining sector, that are the most two most important sectors inside our country when it comes to incomes and natural resources.
The mining negotiations by the end of this year as well?
Yeah, the mining and the concrete plans of investment in the oil and gas sector, the commitment.
Okay, thank you.
If I could ask a somewhat unrelated question, I was just wondering if while you're here in Washington, you're talking to anyone about renewal of the Andean Trade Preferences Program?
My mission here was in relation to the exit.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I see also this other process, but that wasn't the case exactly here.
Okay, unfortunately, Pablo has to go for a radio interview. And thank you all very much. It's been great to have you all here. Thank you very much for coming.